The coronavirus will create a new normal. What will that look like for the food supply chain? I'm Robert Colangelo, and this is Green Sense, where we bring you eco-innovations and dig into the important environmental issues affecting our lives. Every industry has a person who knows everyone and a little bit about everything. Our longtime correspondent, Chris Higgins of Urban Ag News, is that guy when it comes to controlled environment agriculture. Chris, welcome back to Green Sense.
Thanks for having me again.
So there may be one or two people you don't know, but I'd say you know close to everybody in the industry. Isn't that correct?
I may know their names. They might not know who I am, but I know their names.
Well, I've never met a guy so liked and so knowledgeable about a little bit of everything in the industry. So with this coronavirus, your focus is on controlled environment agriculture, which is vertical farming and greenhouses. What kind of an impact do you see to the industry? Is it a boom or a bust from the coronavirus?
If the only way I can respond is actually to say it is both. And it just depends on where you were at coming into this situation. It's been a bust for a lot of the controlled environment agriculture growers or farmers, whatever you want to call them. It's been a bust for them if they were focused on food service, the restaurant industry, and they were a smaller facility and they had all their eggs in that basket. Those growers have been forced, and those farmers have been forced to change very quickly. And it's been pretty inspiring to watch them change very quickly and find a new market or a new audience. But at the same point in time, it's been a very confusing time for them. It's definitely not been a boon because there's been so much cost and so much energy and so much labor and effort on their own, from their own perspectives, to just find that new market that you can't consider it a boom. At the same point in time, those growers and farmers that were set up to service retail and were already working with grocery stores, already had a brand and brand awareness, those growers are doing pretty well, right? It's cyclical, and there's been cycles through this, you know, through the purchasing habits of the consumers. But for the most part, they're doing pretty well, and they're forecasting to do pretty well for the remainder of the year and well into 2021 and 2022.
Well, it's inspiring to hear about vertical farmers, and that's really all part of vertical farming, being nimble, being quick, and being agile. In vertical farming, you have seconds to react to an issue. Whereas in a greenhouse, you might have hours versus a field farm, you know, you have days and weeks to react. So I think that's part of their nature. I heard on a recent report on NPR that consumer-supported agriculture, CSAs, are booming, that people are really focused on locally grown food and being able to work with their farmers. I would think this would have great advantage to vertical farmers. Why isn't it a boom for them?
Those vertical farmers, and let's include small greenhouses in that conversation of people that are tackling the CSA, and that's their way to retail, if you will, their way to go directly to the consumer. What they're attempting to do is provide the whole basket. And in CSA, that's been the historic model, right? Is if you have a CSA, that CSA is responsible for providing you a basket, a variety, if you will, a variety of produce, protein, and other food products. So some of the customers that I have that are trying the CSA model, they're also acting as a small micro distributor for other farmers around there in their area. So they're now becoming, I think the popular term is, they're becoming in ways a food hub to work with other farmers to redistribute that product directly to consumer, where before that product was going directly to the restaurant or to the food service industry. So the difficult part about the CSA is that it is booming, but it's hard to know, like these guys are saying, they're putting so much labor into getting the product to the end user, it's hard for them to know if that's been good for business or not. It's definitely been good from the standpoint of keeping them in business, but they don't know if it's good for long-term business.
So that must mean it must be good for some sectors of the greenhouse industry. Tell me where the bright spots are.
The bright spots really are those guys that are selling directly to the grocery store. So for right now, for right now in the initial phase of the COVID economy, the people who have had it best are those larger scale greenhouse producers who had their supply channel set up, well managed. And one of the things they had going for them versus some of their field competitors is that the greenhouse grower and the larger scale vertical farmer as well has put so much emphasis and energy into food safety that additional protection that they were able to apply both to their workers as well as to the product has had value to the retailer.
Well, you just brought up a good issue, and that is food safety. One of the things I've been thinking about is with all this shelter in place and stay at home, have inspectors been going out to facilities and enforcing food safety regulations?
That's a good question. I haven't heard that they are, and I have not heard that they are not. But I will tell you that the farms themselves are very concerned with managing food safety, while at the same time, which a lot of these attributes are the same, managing the risk associated with their labor pool. You know, the one thing as a farm, especially in the spring, you know, if you're an outdoor farm, this is when everything's happening, right? This is when you're starting to get active and you're most reliant on your labor. And the worst thing that could happen to a farm is they have a COVID outbreak internally and they have to shut down when the plants are ready to be harvested or when the plants are ready to be planted. And so that food safety portion of that, it has a direct relationship to the personal protection of the individual employees. And those go hand in hand. So depending on where you fit, what crop you're doing, how you're packing, how you're harvesting, so forth and so on, determines on like how prepared you were to deal with this and whether or not you had to make an additional investment just to protect yourself from a risk standpoint. And that risk could be all the way to the consumer, or it could be internally and just from protecting your company from being shut down because of an outbreak like we've seen on the protein side of the food channel.
As we've been covering the COVID virus through Eco Innovations here on the show, many of our guests have talked about how the tail on the supply chain is going to get shorter as a reaction to this. We may not want our supply chain so long in foreign countries across the ocean. The forecast is that you're going to probably see a lot more production happen in North America rather than around the globe. Do you think that's going to help vertical farming and greenhouse growing?
I do. I do think it's going to help because on the food side, there's the whole being the farmer side and how that impacts the farm itself. But on the supply side, in terms of supplying food from the farm to the consumer, what that means is that we're no longer going to be able to chase the sun. And there's going to be a certain part of that consumer that doesn't want an imported product and wants to have the feeling of buying local, which we've seen as a growing trend for the last couple of years. But I think that trend may speed up. And in order to produce year round, because the consumer's still going to want what they want when they want it, we're going to have to utilize controlled environment ag techniques to produce when the weather does not allow us to produce outside.
Chris, embellish upon chase the sun.
Chase the sun. That's a term I started using way back when I first got in the industry, meaning that farms, you know, the history of farming is to chase better weather, right? You're chasing the sun because what you need is the sun to grow and have a nice long growing season. The reason we have so many farms in California is because they have a lot of sun. They'll have a lot of rainy days. And without that rainy days, you have less disease. You have a longer growing cycle. You have a better opportunity as a farm to reduce your risk, right? I think you guys are based in Northern Indiana, and I think there was snow in Michigan last week, correct?
Yes.
And the first thing I thought about was my grandparents' farm when we were younger. And I can just imagine hearing what my grandfather would say if there were freezing temperatures after the fruit trees have already went to bud, and thinking about what a disaster it was for those field farmers. And so many farmers have chased the sun to try to keep those sorts of natural disasters from causing them to lose a year.
So that's a great explanation. Another thing I've been thinking about is there's always been a big buzz around organic, but recently we've all just been happy to get food. What has that done to organic sales and pricing?
We haven't seen any real changes in prices on the produce section. I was reading an article, and this is, I have to admit, this is, I'm just starting to understand this. I do know that the consumer spending is changing at the grocery store. The products they're choosing as we get further into COVID-19 and how we're going to learn how to manage this new economy, that their habits are changing. I think that's probably a great topic for us to discuss in 2 to 4 weeks as this goes a little bit further and there's a little bit better data for us to look at as to how their spending habits are changing.
When I go into the store, I never see a shortage of produce. Usually I'm seeing a shortage of staple products, flour, beans, rice, pasta. Have you seen shortages on produce?
No, and I think the reason we haven't has to do with the time of the year. I'm very close to a lot of strawberry growers. And, you know, the strawberry growers in California have had a really good harvest this year. So there's been so much volume in the market that they have not had, you know, that the supply chain has not forced the prices up. The prices have stayed real stable. And in fact, it's still very common by me in the Dallas-Fort Worth area to be able to go buy berries in pints or quarts or larger packet sizes and get them all on sale. So that just shows you that they're still at this time of the year, based on where we're at with harvests, with the harvesting going on in California, that there's ample supply and for a lot of those products in the produce section.
With the COVID virus, with the supply chain shrinking and more things grown local, are there any hot fruits and vegetables that you think we're going to start seeing coming out of controlled environment agriculture that are going to be in big demand?
Ooh, that's a good question. I really hope there are. I think we will. I think strawberries are one that we're going to see. I think that's one that is on the cusp of making financial sense for the farmers to convert to. So we've started to see more and more growers invest in greenhouse grown berries or some sort of controlled environment agriculture to extend their growing season and make them less, allow them to move further away from pesticides and help them with labor management. So I think that's one that we'll see. The two, there's a couple that are going to be interesting because in other parts of the world, they are commercial products. One could be eggplant. Another one could be melons. Those are products that there are commercial growing mechanisms that allow people to produce those profitably in certain countries. And so those would be, other crops that I could see coming this way.
Chris, what about the other end of the supply chain? All the things that you need to support a greenhouse or vertical farm, the substrates, the fertilizers, the mechanical equipment, any gaps or holes in there that are going to prevent production?
There has not been to this point in time. There was a bit of panic buying in the first couple of weeks. I do think that we're going to come into a time where we might see some shortages in some fertilizers. And a lot of this is panic buying at different places around the globe. We have had some strange products that just don't normally sell at the pace that they normally sell at. We've started to see that there'd be small shortages in them, and not really shortages, let's just say delays in getting those products to the farmers. I can see us having problems in 2 to 4 months. And this is not a guarantee, and this is not a forecast of pending problems, but what you could potentially see is that depending on how parent companies are doing financially, you could see, increased layoffs, you could see reduced budgets for inventory, you could definitely see reduced budgets on marketing and definitely reduced budgets on research and development. So what we might see is that, while I don't think it's going to be a true shortage, I think the lead times for the farmers to get the products they need may be extended.
And lead times could be a big problem because farmers have to go to nature's schedule and things have to happen on a certain time. So yeah, That'll be an interesting area to watch. What about any opportunities out there from falling prices? For example, with oil and gas getting much cheaper, a lot of fertilizers are made out of oil. Are we going to see some lower input costs?
We haven't yet. It would be nice if we did, but we haven't yet. And it's not, nobody's forecasting a decrease in price. I like I said, I think they're going to, I think production is going to be affected where, depending on what we see in the next 60 to 90 days, is really going to determine what manufacturers are looking to do from an inventory standpoint. And if they reduce their inventories, there's not going to be extra material in the supply channel. Thereby, they're probably not going to issue discounts. That's what I'm guessing is going to happen.
So an area that perplexes me is labor. You know, we hear 30 million people out of work, but yet you go to try to hire people and you hear there's shortages in area. What is your projection for farm labor? Is it ample or will there be shortages?
There's going to be shortages. Yep, there's going to be shortages. And the farm labor, you know, especially if we're talking on the produce side, if we have any, you know, I hope that this doesn't happen, but if you were to have a situation where you had a COVID outbreak in a farming community, in a heavily dense produce area, then you could see real shortages. The fact of the matter is that a lot of people don't want to do farm labor, right? They don't want to work on the farm, at least not a real production farm, because it's not hard work. And those farm laborers, you know, deserve credit for putting long hours in some very inhospitable conditions. It's not going to be easy to take somebody who might have had a desk job and then convince them to go sweat it out for 12 hours a day, 6 days a week.
That's Chris Higgins with Urban Ag News, giving us the latest on indoor growing. You can subscribe to our podcast at greensensefarms.com. And be sure to check out the Green Sense Minute on WBBM, News Radio 780, and 105.9 FM in Chicago.